This is Hemp%. I'm Vivian McPeak. If you have feedback or would like to suggest a guest or topic for Hemp%, email me at hemppresent@gmail.com. Tribal Hemp and Cannabis Magazine is a culture and lifestyle publication designed for communities protecting sovereignty in the plant medicine economies. Its founder, as well as the founder of the Indigenous Cannabis Coalition, Mary Jane Oatman, is a past president of the National Indian Education Association and a former member of the National Advisory Council on Indian Education. Oatman has also served on the board of the Minority Cannabis Business Association, the co-founder of which has appeared on this show. I'm very glad to have Mary Jane with me today to tell us about all of her efforts. Welcome, Mary Jane, to Cannabis Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor.
My pleasure. You are the founder of the Indigenous Cannabis Coalition, which has as its stated mission to provide education to and for Indigenous communities, elevate tribal communities, and promote traditional and spiritual use. When did you get the idea for the coalition, and what kind of work are you doing to further those goals?
Well, I've always grown up in a household that had a high value for plant medicines. My grandmother went to federal prison when I was a little girl for cultivating the very beautiful and sacred plant amongst our people. And so there's just always been a love and a value for the healing of the medicine itself. And then I was serving on the Minority Cannabis Business Association Board of Directors, which was a phenomenal opportunity to network with other cannabis entrepreneurs and policy thought leaders, practitioners. But while I was doing that work, I realized that it's a heavy lift to get tribal sovereignty in cannabis, as well as just tribes in general, as a part of the conversation. And this was all, mind you, prior to the larger movement in social equity in cannabis. So in 2019, when I founded the Indigenous Cannabis Coalition, it was primarily to service as a complementary organization to uplift tribes in the cannabis industry.
Let's talk about your publication, Tribal Hemp and Cannabis Magazine, the first publication dedicated exclusively to tribal hemp and cannabis communities. Can you describe THC Magazine? What can readers expect to find perusing its pages and its website?
You know, THC Magazine is the keystone to the work that we do at the Indigenous Cannabis Coalition. We have a lot of education and advocacy to do within our tribal communities. That's exactly why we chose the print publication, so that we could get those tangible evidence of change into the hands of our elders, so that they could see the research and the development that was going on, so that our tribal leadership across Indian country that are still on the sidelines in cannabis economic development would be able to have beacons of success with sister tribes to be able to network and partner with as tribes early in the cannabis industry that have a more mature marketplace or thinking more of, like, you know, what does a nation to nation commerce look like? What does, you know, some of the, as legalization conversations occur and people talk about interstate commerce, what would an intertribal commerce in cannabis look like? And so THC Magazine covers everything and anything tribal hemp and cannabis. We are excited to focus on individual entrepreneurs that are doing amazing collaborations with brands like Cookies. We go to the festivals that we do our distribution at and elevate our work with, you know, some of the mainstream you know, cannabis ambassadors that are out there. And then we also you know, provide with permission, of course, you know, rerunning of some of the top news that happen across Indian country that is in a digital format that maybe our tribal communities missed because it's only in that virtual world. And so we find some of those really key articles and work with the original authors to get permission to rerun them. And some of them are really just big news that Indian country just misses out on.
Wow, that's fascinating. You also, I believe, have your own podcast. THC Global Media produces the Smoke Signals podcast. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, we started the Smoke Signals podcast because we realized that the voices of the people in the magazine, we really wanted to find a way to bring them to life, because we were doing the magazine, starting the concept of it in more around like November of 2019. And then, of course, we were not anticipating the global shutdown because of the pandemic, you know, like anybody else was. And so we had to shift a lot of our work that we were doing in the early stages of founding the magazine to formats like this, Zoom recordings, and, you know, hosting a lot of our journalistic interactions through this type of content. And so we realized that's really a premium that we would be able to add in terms of the podcasting, and then finding ways that we could capture those interviews and then bring them back into the magazine so that people would be able to scan a QR code to hear an elder's testimonial, or go and see and visit a tribal nation farm, you know, without having to hop on a plane and go there, but just with, you know, the click of a phone, and find a way to bridge our print media, which I'm really happy that we kept, you know, in the midst of not even knowing that we were going to be impacted by the pandemic, and then just some of the further supply chain issues that have impacted us as a print publication. Would have done it exactly the same all over again, because the issues, every single one of them, are also cataloged in the Library of Congress. And the preservation of story is really also one of the primary features that we do this, as well as some of the proprietary data that we are collecting through our tribal nation dispensary and farm map. So from the get-go, it's always been a goal to provide the advocacy and the education of the magazine for free. And so we do 10,000 print copies every quarter, and you'll find them at dispensaries, you know, a majority of them, I guess you could say about 7,000 of them we distribute in the, you know, western part of the states. I mean, a huge concentration in California, Oregon, Nevada, Washington State, really increasing our distribution into Montana and Colorado. But, you know, we're just kind of started our magazine, and we're just distributing to the locations where there was already a presence, and then started to shift our model back a little bit. Now we're getting out to those communities where they need more of the education, finding as many outlets that we can to be able to distribute them. We're in early stage discussions with Students for Sensible Drug Policy to distribute to all of their membership. So we're always looking to partner with organizations that are looking to add value to their membership services, to, you know, at cost, get the magazine from us and get it shipped to your members so that they can see what's happening in tribal communities, because there are very many opportunities to do business in Indian country for non-tribal businesses, for a variety of different, you know, many of them even non-plant touching ways, you know, insurance, accounting services, security and surveillance. And then, of course, we have tribes that have developed their law and order codes to be able to open up to non-native cultivators to farm on tribal lands under tribal permits and license. So there's a lot of opportunity.
Wow, that's a lot. You mentioned that your grandmother was sent to prison for growing cannabis on your family's allotted land. Land that was passed down after treaty negotiations with the United States government all the way back to the late 1800s, I read. How did your grandmother's incarceration influence your desire to defend tribal sovereignty and empower your community to embrace the cannabis plant?
Oh, it's been 100% the reason why I do what I do. You know, my grandma's 84 years old, almost. I mean, I feel bad when I blast her age out there, because it's just not a very ladylike thing to do. However, she works hard. She still works hard, and she's got a vast amount of land that just sits idle. And it's almost criminal when you look at her hands being tied to be able to cultivate, you know, quality medicine, or to be able to have her relatives, her grandchildren, her children come onto the property and be able to, you know, under tribal law and ordinance, be able to have a thriving economic development opportunity in cannabis. But we can't do that. We're in Idaho, and the complexities of being federally illegal have definitely put a hindrance on it. And it's been one of the reasons why I charge, you know, forward. Idaho is going to be one of the last states in the union. And there's still a lot of unsettled legal questions when it pertains to the indigenous peoples, because many of us had a longstanding economy, tradition, and culture as smoking people, as cultivators of the plant prior to European invasion. So even the whole timeline of federal prohibition on cannabis completely misses the reality and the fact that there was a presence here before, and there's an archaeological record, there's an ethnobotanical record, and there's also the oral traditions. But we have many of our peace pipe and sacred pipe carrying communities are now standing up and speaking for that voice that has been marginalized.
We got a little under a minute for the first break, but cannabis has great potential to provide economic opportunities for indigenous communities, which, you know, is exactly what you're working on. How does tribal leadership tend to view cannabis, and does that vary? Is there widespread acceptance of the plant, or is there some reluctance by some to become involved in cannabis and hemp by some tribal leaders?
You know, it's really sad to say that since there was more of the push for economic cannabis as an economic driver, it really was not much of a priority. I mean, in Washington state, it's been medically legal since 1998. Not one tribe has been cultivating at a scale to meet the medical needs of the people. And once recreational retail opened up, that was like Pandora's box. And so there's since legalization and since states open up and legalize, you see more of a trend, but it's not a majority, definitely not a majority.
I am speaking with Mary Jane Oatman of the Indigenous Cannabis Coalition. We're going to take a first break and come back with our second segment, so don't go anywhere. We got a lot of good stuff coming up.
Time to roll out for the people that let us hemp present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
We're back with Mary Jane Oatman of THC Magazine and the Indigenous Cannabis Coalition. Mary Jane, there is a history of, well, in my opinion, a criminal degree of oppression and unfair treatment of Indigenous communities by the United States government, and really from governments all over the world. I'm curious, how do federal laws in the United States regarding cannabis and hemp impact North American tribes who seek to cultivate or sell cannabis and hemp on tribal lands? I would think that they have sovereignty, but we know that the way that's often treated. Do Native communities face any unique challenges when it comes to cannabis?
You know, I would have to like almost directly quote the current Secretary of Interior while she was serving as the Congresswoman, one of the first, you know, Native women elected to Congress for New Mexico, Deb Haaland. You know, said it so eloquently, you know, the current laws pertaining to federal cannabis are in the way of tribes. I mean, they're just completely in the way. We were really honored to be able to have Deb Haaland write a contribution to the very first issue of THC Magazine. And then she went even further and provided this amazing testimonial, uplifting Tribal Hemp and Cannabis Magazine as being pivotal in providing the education to tribes about the opportunities for economic development, as well as, how integral it is for tribes to protect tribal sovereignty in cannabis. And so right now there's a lot of complexity going on because, you know, like there was a raid in the Picarias Pueblo community in November of last year. And this raid happened just on the heels of President Biden, you know, releasing his administrative priorities, one of them being, you know, honoring and upholding the trust relationship with, you know, the Native tribes in this nation. And then boom, you get a raid by the Bureau of Indian Affairs on an elder in a tribe that has an approved medical cannabis ordinance for the tribe in a state where it is approved to cultivate medical cannabis. And he had a state, he had a dual license. He had a state and a tribe license, because ironically, this this man that was raided on the tribal federal property held in trust by the federal government, but the homelands of the Picarice Pueblo. His domestic partner is native. She's a member, an enrolled member of the Picarice Pueblo, but he was non-native. And so there was just, I mean, just to throw a curveball at an already super complex issue. I mean, he's never been charged with anything. He was basically robbed at gunpoint by the BIA.
Wow.
His 9 plants. And he was very open about it. He's like, yeah, I got plants. I got my license. I got my papers, you know? And so incidences like that are going to make it 10 times harder for tribes to want to come from the sidelines and get in the game and find a way that they can build an economy that's cleaner, that's greener, that's more aligned with their cultural values, and will provide a greater avenue towards healing for their people than the current health model of, you know, greet, treat, and street. And it's basically a, you know, a pharmaceutical model, and it's killing our people.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's killing the planet.
Yes.
The whole mindset, right? Alex Whiteplume, an Oglala Lakota leader in South Dakota, planted his first hemp crop on Wounded Knee Creek on the Pine Ridge Reservation, I believe. And former Green Party presidential candidate Winona LaDuke operates Winona's Hemp Heritage Farm in Snellman, Minnesota. What other notable Native leaders working in cannabis and hemp should our listeners know about?
Well, aside from, you know, the wonderful Secretary of Interior Howland, we have featured some, you know, some phenomenal people that even at the time were, I guess I didn't realize the magnitude of the power of telling their story specifically, and then the influence that they have to make that change in policy, to make that change in terms of the mindset of the negative stigma that exists in tribal communities. So one of those is Heather Dawn Thompson. She is now one of the top attorneys at the Department of Agriculture's Office of Tribal Relations. And we've been able to feature Amber Torres, who is the Walker River Paiute Tribal Chairwoman. And oh my goodness, I feel like so on the spot.
I'm putting you on the spot. Yeah. Well, maybe I mean, what people should do is get a hold of your magazine, right?
Yes, they should definitely get a hold of my magazine, because what we did in the very first issue was featured in, well, the first one was just a short issue, kind of geared a little bit more towards policy, and it was only 24 pages just to get it out the door. And every issue since then has been 48 pages, you know, gloss cover to cover of, you know, some amazing stories. You know, when I mentioned earlier about the opportunity of the preservation of the story, we're working sometimes with elders that are telling their stories about how this plant has helped them heal through some of the most traumatic times, like boarding schools, or like having their children taken from them by the government wrongfully during the Indian child, you know, theft days. Some of these elders have passed away due to COVID, and they're, you know, some of them are even struggling in health right now, you know. So my prayers to all of the people and their families that have been a part of this journey, because the stories that we've been able to preserve are just treasures. They truly, truly are treasures. And there's, I think, a lot of healing in not only telling your story, but picking up other people's stories and reading them. You see threads of things that have impacted your life, whether it be, you know, through the parallel time frame or just something. And I am just a huge proponent of healing through storytelling. And so when I have difficulty in selling ads because I'm just maybe working a little bit more robotic, like I'm just, you know, worrying about the financial health of a magazine as a businesswoman publishing a magazine, You know, I'll take the time to just look at the magazines as they hang on my wall, pick some of them up and read the stories. And then, you know, it shifts the energy of my sales calls to, you know, this is about the preservation of story. This isn't, it's definitely about, you know, building Indigenous brands and, you know, showcasing the best of Indigenous grown throughout the nation. But the stories that are featured in the magazine, I was just, as we were saying this, I was just thinking, you know, the opportunity to showcase not just Amber Torres, but I think three other elected, you know, tribal chair people, Brandy Taylor of the San Ysabel Nation, David Bean of the Puyallup Nation. And these are really, you know, really important leaders in not only their communities, but across Indian country, because other leaders listen to them and they're learning from them. And they are maybe taking that baby step closer towards learning about how cannabis or hemp on the fiber side might be a move for their tribe strategically to diversify for their people.
We hear a lot of talk in the cannabis industry, cannabis community, about social equity, and you know, the social equity components that have been kind of embedded into recent legislation, I think most of us see are inadequate. Don't go far enough at all to address the harms that prohibition has disproportionately meted out to communities of color in general. But what I see lacking in almost all of these conversations about social equity is an inclusion of Indigenous communities. Do you agree?
Oh, I would definitely agree, Vivian. I've been actually a lot of the work of late 2020 and all of 2021 has been a message of inclusivity, and that, you know, some of the pillars of and the foundation of all cannabis policy should include Indigenous communities. And then to see that we're just not even included in the social equity conversations, any of the programs that are afforded, and it's sad, because a lot of times it just goes back to being so marginalized. There's our population is just so small as an endangered species. But again, we go back to that, you know, having that original tie and connection here, so much so that, I mean, the peace pipe is on the Jefferson Peace Medal. I mean, the peace pipe is on the Jefferson Peace Medal. And was used in courtship, if you will, amongst the relationships with the tribe. So that's a recognition that tribes on the East Coast definitely had that sacred relationship with smoke. And then, of course, they also have, I mean, it's ridiculous to think that this amazing plant and the seed has been on this globe for as long as it has, but that, you know, it would have never found its way through trade networks to this continent, like prior to European, you know, settlement. It just makes absolutely no sense.
I got to go to break, but I just want to say that this conversation is even more striking with critical race theory and the controversy going around that right now as well. I am speaking to Mary Jane Oatman. We're going to take another break and come back with our final questions.
Time to roll out for the people that let us hemp present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
All right, we are back with Mary Jane Oatman. Mary Jane, this is just such an important conversation, and I just really am so glad to have you on the show. How can people check out and support Tribal Hemp and Cannabis Magazine and the Indigenous Cannabis Coalition? And what final thoughts would you like to leave our listeners with today?
Well, we have a website, www.indigenouscannabiscoalition.com, where we encourage any and everybody to go and download our gorgeous publication, THC Magazine, for absolutely free. I apologize on the front end for the daunting store checkout process, but that's allowed us to really capture some data so that we could build our listservs as a brand new cannabis nonprofit as well. We've been just kind of working on building data, determining exactly what our scopes of services were going to be. So we've never actually done a huge capital fundraising campaign. We've just been able to scrap by with THC Magazine. I cashed in what little bit of a retirement that I had to be able to make it come to life, and then just continued through the pandemic, refining the model to build advertisement sales. So if you are in the hemp and cannabis industry, we are not exclusive to indigenous owned brands on the advertising side. We have insurance companies, we have security and surveillance companies that are looking to do business in Indian country, and anybody that, you know, that has the goodwill and ethical business practices and wants to find, you know, their inroads to tribal cannabis community, THC Magazine is definitely that inroad. So reach out to us through our website. Advertising with THC Magazine is as easy as 1, 2, 3. We sell our pages at $1,000, $2,000, and $3,000. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, increasing the value by driving content to our advertisers, digital platforms, social media. And we just really appreciate being able to be the nation's first and only, to be that trailblazer. I have no doubt that, you know, as time grows and evolves, that, you know, other things will evolve and emerge. And so I'm always keeping my ear to the ground, you know, in terms of finding creative partnerships to, you know, create events and just do some really big things for creating more opportunity for conversation. And so we're in the early stages of going out into tribal communities for cannabis TED Talks, which are, you know, cannabis tribal economic development talks, because a lot of our tribes still need that level of intensive community conversation. And so while it's nice to host a big national conference and we all have a blast gathering together in mass, it really is critical to get to communities to provide a more intimate level conversation, you know, to bring in the salves, you know, and have those elders that are just really anti and, you know, really don't understand the medicinal qualities, to actually have the chance to try a CBD salve and rub it in their hands and feel the healing properties themselves, so that they themselves can start to break down those walls. So, you know, bringing, you know, some of our product samples into tribal communities where they're currently lacking access because they don't even have any sort of a model in states where it's completely legal.
Wow. You're so impressive. Mary Jane Oatman, founded indigenouscannabiscoalition.com. Thank you so much for taking time out to be on the show. You stay strong and good luck with all your important work.
Well, thank you so much.
My pleasure. That concludes this installment of Hemp Zen on Cannabis Radio. When it comes to prohibition, you have the right not to remain silent. Activism requires a voice, so find your voice and speak up for justice, because resistance is fertile. See you next week, folks.
Marijuana!
The opinions expressed on this CannabisRadio.com program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of CannabisRadio.com. Any rebroadcast, republication, or retransmission of this program without proper consent is prohibited.
Warning: the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated. Forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.